the whole closure of the ports, well, shutting down Barbados, basically shutting down our borders and whatnot. The Prime Minister has dealt with that, saying that it really was not feasible. It didn't really make economic sense. And this is one of the things that has driven this statement, of course, that there seems to be more interest in economics than people. Maybe, Dr. Nitram, your take on this whole statement that is being said, is there any validity to it based on what is the measures that have been put on the table by the government so far?
That is a very tricky question to answer. So let me begin again by saying that our public health concerns certainly have to take precedent over any economic concerns. And even if you just go from a purely cold-hearted economic perspective, any illnesses, any deaths will have a long-lasting impact on the economy. So if you're just taking a purely economic perspective on this, then you still come to the conclusion that public health concerns must come first. It is a tough place to have to make a decision from. Do we take preemptive action, or do we wait until something happens? I think at the end of the day, we were always going to have to end up closing effectively shutting down the tourism industry, because it is the most directly affected industry. At this point, whether we should have done it earlier or later is sort of a moot question. What I think we need to concern ourselves with is, going forward, how do we deal with both the human impact and the economic impact? And I think it's always difficult for us to say that we're just dealing with the economic impact, or we're not thinking about people. But I mean, economics is literally about people, and it's literally about people having money in their pockets, because you can't tell a person, you're unemployed, we don't really care what you're doing. We don't care if you have money, we don't care if you, have a job or have savings, blah, 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 and we're doing this for public health, because that will drive a person crazy as well. And that will have a severely negative impact on our economy. And so it is important that we do take into account economic concerns. But in saying that, public health has to come first. And I don't think it, really makes any sense at this point rehashing what we've gone through in the past couple of weeks. And instead, right now, it is important that we make the correct policy decisions. I think, for me, what is crucial now going forward is that we give people the incentives to behave in a manner that's consistent with public health. What does that mean? It means that, for example, the government's strategy of ensuring that people are paid up to 60% of the
if you're laid off, 60% of your salary, of your wage or salary, for the period that you're
will
not
be covered.
Working,
you'll be covered. So something like that allows people to feel a lot more comfortable with staying home, which at some point we may need to do. Allowing businesses to access liquidity, funding, that is, during this time, in order to hold them over until it's all over, is important, to allow businesses that are at risk to feel comfortable closing rather than staying open and presenting a risk to public health generally. Allowing people to work from home. Any of these policies which allow us or incentivize behavior that is in line with public health guidelines are very important. These are economic, these are economic policies, but they do have very important impacts on public health. And so to try to disentangle the two, I think, would be a disaster. And importantly, policy instruments need to be designed right away if we're going to mitigate the long run effect. Mm-hmm. And all that said, yes, we still do need to put public health before we put any economic concerns.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll first go to Dr. Greenidge, and if you can look at some of the policies that have been actually put in place, like talking about what the banks are going to do, the commercial banks, in terms of relief they're going to give, and some of the other things that the Prime Minister said. And then we'll come to Dr. Lashley again, in terms of whether these measures would help alleviate some of the psychological pressure on the population and will help us to cope better with this whole pandemic. So, Dr. Greenidge.
Thank you. And I agree with Simon. I think it's difficult to disentangle the economics from the social effects, because if you put money in your pocket, which is the economic issue, you're still going to be, it will impact you socially. Just one note about the border shutting down. I mean, it's out of my league, on my debt, but just in my understanding, if you look at what's happening worldwide, is that there's no indication that shutting, closing the borders affect anything. In fact, one of the most successful cases so far in dealing with South Korea, and it seems that what really matters is testing, extensive amount of testing to identify persons, and then doing the necessary diagnostic investigation to track and follow and get every contact they have had. I see, and South Korea has done 5,500 tests per 1 million versus the US 74 tests per 1 million, and you can see the difference. So, and then as Simon pointed out, effectively tourism stopped on its own. The country can't, there's no one coming. All the airlines have stopped flying. So what are you closing the border against right now? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But that's a different take. And so in terms of policies, I think the most important thing is that every division, every business need to now take a moment to familiarize themselves with all the various facilities and tools that may be available for them to weather this crisis, both business and individuals. So on the individuals' household side, and you see in the presentation, the Prime Minister's speech, it's something called a household survival program. And to mention two or three, Simon and yourself just talk about persons getting NIS up to 60% of their, if a fellow used to work for 5 years and he lost two, and NIS would pay for the two up 60%.
How exactly does this, sorry to cross, but how exactly does that work? Because I have a WhatsApper here who says, Mr. Murray, can you get someone to speak to the arrangement for those who got laid off to get unemployment benefits as well? He wants, if you can just deviate a bit and or bring it up when you just finish your presentation, because this is something that this person is asking.
So my advice to the person is really to get in touch with NIS, because I understand NIS is set up a one-shop employment benefits where you can go and get information, make it easier to file your claims, easier to get access. I can't speak there to it. I'm not going to try. I don't know the details. But I will just advise the person to get directly in touch with NIS. I mean, this is an NIS program, and they're making it easier, because you need persons at home. You don't want persons to be having to come and get in line, so get in touch with them. But there's that. There's also provision of actually making more funds, and I think for the whole program right now, the government set aside $20 million initially. So persons impacted by this, in terms of most vulnerable, identifying most 1,500 vulnerable families impacted, and making available to them $600 per month, and that will cost about $900,000 a month. And this initially maybe a step up depending on what space you have and to deal with issues. So that's another one. So if you're not qualified, for example, NAS, but you've been impacted again, you reach out to the welfare department, the household mitigation unit in the Prime Minister's office. So people need to familiarize themselves with these things and reach out. And of course, the NAS Unemployment Fund will be supported by government to the extent we can on the fiscal space we have. And then I think the most important one, the one I think is what we need to do, which brings out the human element in a crisis. You know, you get the best of human behavior. Is we have started with this adopt a family program. And I think this is where, in currently about this, we have about 500 persons earning above $100,000 in salary, $100,000. And if each one of those persons was to reach out and adopt a vulnerable family and contribute $600, that would help a tremendous amount of people. And you don't have to earn that. Even below that, what the fund we set up, adopt a family program fund, I believe the information is made available in terms of which bank and account, everything. Yeah. And if every person, you don't have to earn $100,000. It's what you can afford. What's the thing here is to hold your brother's arm. Reach out to a person close and help each other. This is what they're doing, trying to do across the world. And we should be no different. So everything doesn't have to be government. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a very powerful, because by nature, Bajans are very kind and giving. And I think this is where we have to show that we can take care of each other. Nobody should suffer. Mm-hmm. So that's only household mitigation, and that would be champion. If you may be in a position and you have some funds and you're earning money, allow you to do it. You don't know a vulnerable family, you reach out to the welfare department, the household mitigation department, and ask for family and take it from there, or just donate to the fund if you don't have the time. So I think this is where we have to strengthen the safety net. In fact, all in all, we have probably one of the strongest social safety nets in the region, and perhaps I would argue in the world. I mean, maybe I'd be proven wrong. But this crisis showed the weakness of the US system, for example, in terms of taking care of the vulnerable. We have it, we can use it. So I think, yes, the situation is there, but we shouldn't begin panicking. If we each take care of each other, we can weather this out. In terms of the businesses, you mentioned a few. We are allowing employees, if they are able, to keep at least a third, and really may look at of the employment people on, then you will defer your employer's contribution to NIS. Initially 3 months, and then we look at it beyond the duration, because that is a part of your cost. And if you can keep that on, maybe you can keep a fella still working 3 weeks, so a combination. Think of a hotel might keep a guy on, instead of 5 days, 3 days. He's saving on his wages, the hotelier. He's getting to defer his NIS contribution. And that person is getting something for NIS to sit here at the mover. At the same time, that same business, hotel, or thing can approach the banks who have now agreed, and many banks have published, put a press release that if you are impacted by this crisis, you can get a moratorium on your debt service for up to 6 months. Not only that, so now he's going to, so think of a cost of business. He's going to get help on his wages. He's getting help on his NIS. Now he can defer the cost of paying of his debt service for a period. And in addition to that, the banks have said, well, you may need some financing option, money to keep the capital going, some investment, some money to hold you over. So the banks are making available capital financing options. So you talk to your banker, you know you're going to save there. So you don't have to, you're watching your cash flow. When things pick up, then you can return to normal. That's a 6 months of moratorium. You could temporary working capital. And you saw the $20 million put into the small hotel investments fund. So maybe in this time, since not much persons on your property, time to, if you can get that fund and get and then some other funds, to start to refurbish and deal with hotels. So when the day comes and say, all right, Bobby's open for business, the world's open for business, you can start on the ball and say, yeah, I'm ready. So these, so my message would be businesses, employers, individuals need to become familiar with what is out there. There's enough right now that we have in terms of a blanket of assistance programs that nobody should suffer. So if you look, your neighbor, you look to your left and to your right and somebody's suffering, reach out to them and help them as much as you can. Bring it to your attention, your authorities, because a lot of times a fellow don't know. Like they call it on the phone, he's asking. He generally don't know. So now someone needs to get in touch with him, reach out to him. He can reach out to him, household mitigation office. I don't know my number. Maybe someone could WhatsApp it to you. You can reach out to the welfare department. Someone could send that number. Or to NAS and ask for this information. And I think this is something government be doing, stepping up. It's information to the country and to persons. But yes, so there's no need for anybody to feel stressed and panic.
Dr. Lashley, in view of what was just said by Dr. Greenidge, do you think that these types of coping mechanisms, as long as they're, or I should say, these types of mitigation measures, do you think that once they have been publicized and once people start to receive the benefits from them, that this would help them cope better with the change and the inconvenience and the changes they have to go through?
I agreed with almost everything he said except his very last statement caused a little bit of concern, and that is that there's no need for people to panic. I think it is easier said than done. What we do know is that there are many people who are not even connected socially to begin to access this information. And not just access it, but also respond to all the options that are available to them. Some of the most vulnerable people in this society have no social connections at all, no church attendance, no social groups or organizations, nothing. They are very much under the radar of a lot of our social services and are afraid to even approach for help in some cases. So we have to be very, very careful about how we say, well, these things are available, and while officially they are, if people don't know about them or are comfortable or have assistance in being able to access it, it really is a game changer for some people. The other danger is us talking in silos, as if the politics around this situation, the economics and social behavior are all in very distinct little neat compartment. When we talk about behavior of people, it's a lot more complex than that. And we have to find a mechanism now for us to begin to have that discussion outside of our individual silos and connect more forcibly. Let me give you an example. We saw panic buying in Barbados, and we thought, wow, we've seen it overseas, and now it has come here. One of the statistics that we're monitoring, apart from job loss statistics overseas, is the statistics on the buying of firearms, which has gone up higher in the last couple of days than in 4 months, four years, in two major countries in the world. So people to respond in very unusual ways. Let me talk about some of the solutions then that I think, apart from ones that have been shared, and I really want to commend the fact that we need to get back to some fundamentals in our society. And this virus and illness around the virus have shown us in this country that our family system, which has been broken for so long, and which we need now more than ever, people to be supportive of each other, even biological relatives, not just friends and associates. We have relatives who don't care about each other, brothers and sisters, who don't speak to each other in families. And when moments like this come, it shows how much we really need some of those natural bonds to be very, very strong, because it is in the strength of those bonds that we will survive. So apart from all that's shared, let's try to get back to supporting family members and rebuilding some of the bonds. The reading for Mass this morning was 1 Samuel 16 of the anointing of David, and part of that was about how music was able to soothe Saul when he went through his troubled moment. And we in Barbados somehow tend to think that we need money to do a lot of the things that make us happy. And some of the simplest things in life are free. And I want to go back to that lesson for us as a nation, that there are things we can do together, there are things that we can do individually to lift our spirits, to give us hope, that do not cost an awful lot, and in some cases cost absolutely nothing, you know, enjoying our environment, our natural environment, even more. I want to talk about behavior change and infection control, because I think this is something that we need to take seriously again. And for us to take home the message that if we behave individually in this country as everyone being infected, and therefore taking precautions not to infect the other person, that mindset alone, that not that we're immune, but that we could potentially be asymptomatic, that makes a huge difference in terms of how we interact with other people, how we behave, how we engage others. And the other message, believe it or not, is that we are still very much in the cold and flu season. And we are in a season where we have Sahara dust still coming over and people are impacted by sinuses. So every person who coughs does not have COVID-19. And for us not to be judgmental of other people or looking at other people with suspicion and scorn, really, I think is something that every single person can do as we engage in our social interaction.
All right, let Dr. Greenidge respond to you, but before that, I just want to remind everyone that this program is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries, Inc.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful Permaclad U-Panel and R-Panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joints from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory-painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices. Delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas 425-2000 or Lowlands Christ Church 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tacks Sunday. Sanka Price with you along with Dennis Johnson, and we have Dr. Kevin Greenidge here. I'd like you to respond first, sir, to Dr. Lashley, and then we'll go to Marla Ducran and to look at what's happening regionally as well in terms of some of the policies being put in place.
Thank you. You know, I tend to stay in my lane. An economist, and I believe I'm pretty good at that. But I wouldn't challenge Dr. Lashley, but my view is panic helps no one. And in this environment, we have to have a message of no panic. Panic just hurts. There's no need to panic. My point was that if each of us look out for the other person, this yesterday afternoon, there's an elderly lady that lives across from me. And I went over. I stayed in the road because I don't want to cause any danger to her. I may or may not have it, so I have to act if I have it. And I said to her, well, you know, if you need anything, if you got any concerns, call me on my phone. I can sort you out, make sure you're taken care of. There's another person living next to me. I did a similar thing. But they don't have to be living next to you. I think each one of us knows somebody that's vulnerable. In your family, a brother you don't speak to but needs some help. The message should not be. In my view, there's no need to panic anyhow, because things are being done. There's need for action, and action is being taken. And let me say something which I think is perhaps controversial. I personally did not see panic buying. I probably can't explain toilet paper, but I didn't see panic buying. I see Belgians who decided to do their shopping early. If they don't, most Belgians don't have enough money again, but don't go and shop again. If two days ago, you went in Price Mart, and it wasn't full. People just took the opportunity because they have a storm coming, a pandemic coming, a health crisis is coming, and persons take the opportunity to buy their monthly, weekly groceries in advance and stock up. That's not panic buying, that is common sense. Mm-hmm. So that's my view, I don't see it. If you know, panic buying, you're back in the stores. What I think we got to make sure is that everybody, and we got, and this is a question of closing borders, we can't feed ourselves. So we got to make sure that we're able to get food and make sure it's enough around that persons can have. And that's my feel. So my message is, be our brother's keeper. There's no need for panic. And I think this should be the message. Yes, the person who don't have access to social media, the elderly person who has this, and that's where each one of us who have been blessed and placed in a fortunate position needs to reach out and see who you can help, a person who don't know, right? And that's just my message.
Mm-hmm. Marla, what sort of measures are being put in place? What sort of mitigating measures are being put in place in other parts of the region? Marla, are you there?
You know, I'm here. Are you hearing me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay, so it varies widely. I mean, you have Bahamas, for example, that has imposed a curfew from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. and shut all, bars, restaurants, everything. So there is, you know, very little activity taking place. You have countries that have closed borders. Trinidad and Tobago, most notably, as of midnight tonight, will close its borders, even to its citizens and nationals and residents. So we have some pretty interesting and diverse responses from all over the region. Many governments, most notably this government, Cayman Islands, Trinidad and Tobago, have been implementing various policy measures in terms of stimulus, fiscal stimulus, monetary stimulus. Most countries have already lowered interest rates and lowered the reserve requirements that banks are required to hold at the central bank. So that gives banks more ability to lend and to support their clients at this time. Most banks, most of the international banks have announced all kinds of various relaxation of repayment terms. So people will not in every instance be forced to make payments on mortgages and car loans and so on when they are faced with a challenge in terms of employment and income. So there is a wide range, but also a huge response you're seeing in the region. But I just want to say, because I have to leave shortly, but I just wanted to say that I am very impressed with the response of this government. I feel like, unlike some of the other responses I have seen, there is no, in this case in Barbados, no indication that this is, being any response is being done for short-term political gain. I feel like there is a sense of a long-term economic plan that is being adhered to, but is being relaxed. And with the understanding of what's happening, I mean, the kind of response that I'm seeing here, I feel the economic team behind it needs to be commended. Dr. Kevin Greenidge, who we have with us today, included. But, you know, things like the 1,000 affordable homes that's being built in a public-private partnership, that kind of thing is just what we need, in the sense that it takes care of a longer-term need, but it also provides a short-term stimulus. And also the government matching the investment that will come in the next 3 months from the private sector. This has to be, and it is in Barbados, very much a private-public sector partnership type approach, which I not necessarily have seen in every country in the region. And so I want to commend the government, but also the private sector here for what it has demonstrated in terms of the solidarity to make this trying time as bearable as possible for people, for businesses, and for the economy to be able to be positioned to recover when and the recovery will come. And so I just wanted to add that.
All right. Mr. Ed Clark, if you're still there. And one of the concerns would be if the banks, if the businesses are doing all of this, especially the banks, banks have a reputation that they don't do anything for nothing. So if they're doing all of this, then at the end of the day, what could we possibly face as consumers? Higher fees later down the road. Mr. Clark, are you still there?
Nice, thank you. First of all, let me say, I think everybody looks at the business people as well as the SPs for profits and fees. I think there's a misperception of how business operates in Barbados. Businesses operate to make money. I mean, that's a given. Every investor wants a return on their investment. But there's a huge people side to business that is really not looked on by the public of Barbados. That the business sector in Barbados has a huge empathy and feeling for their customers and the wider public. I do not see the bank trying to take advantage of this situation. I do not see any companies in Barbados really trying to take advantage of the situation. At this time in Barbados, the private sector, and the wider private sector, from small businesses right up to the big conglomerates, are doing their utmost to try and ensure that Barbadians can survive during this crisis. I think you would have seen in the press recently how the members of the Chamber of Commerce and the Ministry of Trade and Industry had meetings to discuss how we could keep prices down on the essential basket at this time. There's no doubt that if the borders do remain open, and we hope that they continue to import goods and services, that there will be some supply chain changes and the prices will go up from the overseas suppliers for some commodities. But we are doing our utmost with the government's help, obviously, on duties, et cetera, to try and maintain the prices and even hopefully in some cases be able to lower the prices of certain items or many of the items that are available in the basket of goods for the public. I really don't see this as any way the banks will try to capitalize on this thing forward and the other entities as well in the financial services sector. I don't think that's anywhere in the thought process at this time.
All right, thank you. Let's take a couple of calls. It's now 12:10. Of course, we break at 12:30 for the latest. You're on the air. Good morning. Welcome to Brass Tack Sunday.
Good morning, you guys. Thanks for a wonderful job, and thanks to the Prime Minister for foresight and everything. But for me, there's a little anomaly. I don't know what is the panel's view on this. But if you want to encourage building and the capital projects and so on, like the Hyatt and so on, and then you have to... You will still have to have the movement of the workers moving, not only workers, but ancillary industries around in terms of people providing food. But coming to the actual site and moving might still involve a number of persons on, say, a minibus. And I just wonder if, now that the tourism sector has gone dead, we already have all these big buses that would carry 24 persons. If there couldn't be some arrangement where where you might only carry a maximum of 12. That's a ballpark figure, a number you throw out, so that you wouldn't get that kind of closeness. Because if you're going to be attending those areas, I feel that the concern primary really would be to try to not to affect the transmission of the virus.
I'll put a spin on what you're saying. I take it basically that you're saying that given the fact that we have social distancing and that is going to be playing a large part in everything, how can you really get things going locally in terms of the construction projects and whatnot, given the fact that people have to be moving to work via public transport and they have to also be working in close quarters on these sites? That's essentially what you're saying, correct?
Exactly.
Right.
And I will also let the extended should we consider the fact that I have the buses. Even if, because a number of persons who will be working site will probably have their own transportation, but there will be a few that wouldn't, and therefore some kind of arrangement with the who's doing the construction and contractors should be made to provide for those people who wouldn't, so they won't have to travel in those large groups.
All right, well, thank you. I think it's an interesting point to raise, and let's go to another call. We'll make a note of that and go to another call. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Ms. Sanger Price?
Yes, sir.
This is Mohammed Nasima. How are you?
I am fine, thank you.
Good. You got a very interesting program going there, but I want to say something to all your guests and so there. The reason... I'm sorry that this coronavirus in Barbados and really destroying the system and the economy and so on. But, you know, it's a lesson that Barbadian government, including this government under the Honorable Prime Minister Mayor Motley, must understand. You cannot destroy manufacturing and agriculture and no society for tourism. because tourists can only function off of manufacturing and agriculture. What has been happening in Barbados since Tom Adams took over this country, went on to this country, manufacturing were destroyed in this country to help a few minority people in this country. And to this day, we are suffering for it to this day. So I hope when all this thing is finished now, that the tourist sector and all the private sector will do what Kira Hunt did when he was the head of the private sector. The reason why Royal Air France was established in Barbados, although I felt who do all the engineering thing, the body with the real idea to produce Royal Air France in Barbados was Kieran. Kieran is the man who we saw metal in his store, and Mr. Smith went and asked him if we could beg him for a chair to measure. He said, "No, man, I'm not going to give you no chair. I have four sets here. I'm going to send all four sets up to you." And that is where Raw Iron start, because they didn't start, the only man about to start doing that kind of work at that time. No, I hope that the private sector, and all of us know who in this trouble with Barbados over the coronavirus, but on the side, it's time enough that they sit down and decide that any and all things that can be done for tourism in Barbados must be done in Barbados. So when we have a crisis like this again, we will not be struggling the way we are struggling. Yes, we might be sick, but we will not be struggling the way we are struggling. This idea about a few people controlling all the wealth in Barbados must stop. And every time I say it, there are a few people get annoyed. But it don't bother me, Mr. Price. You know me, but no, I really don't care. We'll get vexed. I hope that those people in there with you, good people, good minds, willing to work, will sit down and really analyze seriously how we can get the productive sector in Barbados going again to support the tourist sector and stop bringing everything from outside. You're paying, Mr. Price.
Well, I'll get some of my esteemed guests here to answer you, who are much more qualified talking about that than I am. Simon, Dr. Natrum?
So I'm just going to try to address what the previous caller said, and I think is an important question, because there comes some point where, again, our public health concerns will sort of directly contradict, trying to get the economy going and trying to keep it running. And again, in those cases, public health has to take precedent. It is a tricky situation that we might find ourselves in at some point, and it is a situation that we have to prepare ourselves for. And I think that's why focusing, especially on the policies that allow us to maintain good public health practices, so the policies that, if necessary, allow people to stay at home, are by far the most important. And while we can, as long as we can, maintain productive activity, refurbishing properties, etc., it may come to some point that this is no longer feasible. And it's at that point, I think, that, the idea of going back to freezing the economy is very important, because it's just about almost holding strain until the thing has passed. Mm-hmm. As I said, it becomes somewhat like a natural disaster, in that it's not necessarily that you're trying to put people back to work, but you want people to stay inside and stay safe until the thing has passed, and then we can rebuild. It is really important to think of it like that. And there is a useful opportunity here, which is that, the productive activity that we are going to engage in doesn't necessarily always have to be physical activity. And it's an important sort of critical juncture for us to begin to think about expanding our digital economy as much as possible. We do have lots of manpower which will be underutilized at this point, and we will have opportunities for new businesses to arise. New things will be needed, and we do need to think creatively about how this presents an opportunity for us to begin to restructure our economy. And I think this sort of ties into what the second caller was talking about as well, because there is always a need to think about diversification. There is this deep trade-off between the sort of economies of scale you get from concentrating in one industry as a small island, but the reduced risk that comes with diversification. And in so far as we can, we want to diversify into things that are high wage, high skill, and a lot of those fall into the line of the digital economy and into the internet-based economy that at this time continues. And it will demand a lot of the technological investment and technological advancements that Barbadian businesses in particular and Barbadians in general have resisted for so long. And it is sort of time for us to take them all on board and to try to, the word would be to sort of create a renaissance in how we do things in Barbados.
All right. We have on the line Minister of Finance, Mr. Ryan Strong. Are you there, Mr. Strong?
Hi, good morning, Simon.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. You were listening just now to Dr. Simon Natrum, the president of the Economic Society, talking about the need for diversification of our economy. Mohamed Nasser put it on the table that this is, you know, this crisis demonstrates the need for why we should have a strong manufacturing sector. Some people will tell you as well that we need a strong local agricultural sector to ensure that we can feed ourselves even better than we're doing now. But with COVID-19, there's obviously a major impact on our economy, and I'd like to just get your take. We only have something like 8 minutes, so I don't know if you'll be able to join us after the latest as well. But can you just talk to us about the situation so far and what is being... We've looked at, of course, at what is being done because we have Dr. Kevin Greenidge here, your colleague. So your take on what is being said so far?
Yes. Let me first impress upon Barbados that what is absolutely critical at this time is managing, first and foremost, the public health implications for COVID-19. And so whilst the conversation with respect to the economy is important, and I know that people have already been directly impacted, the government of Barbados is working in terms of deploying the adequate resources to first and foremost respond to the clear public health issue. Now, managing the public health issue is absolutely critical for any policy response from government to be effective. And therefore, our focus right now is to ensure that, one, we can provide or continue to provide the normal health care provision as much as possible with respect to the population for those persons who would normally get ill, whilst at the same time building capacity to be capable of dealing with the response for COVID-19. So I want to indicate to all Barbadians and certainly to yourselves that right now it is absolutely important that we focus on what is required to contain the spread of COVID-19 in Barbados. We are at stage two, which means that there is in-country transmission. And therefore, the important thing right now for the whole of Barbados is to participate in what is required, given the advice from the medical professionals with respect to how we can contain the spread of COVID-19. The Prime Minister certainly on Friday night and announced a number of measures that we will take with respect to responding. But I want to speak specifically today because on the monies that we voted on Friday night with respect to supporting the immediate works that are required to be done. And therefore, I have a number of meetings this afternoon to follow up and to ensure that we have in place the things that are required in order for us to be able to manage this current outbreak with respect to COVID-19 and the pandemic, and how Barbados will respond in that on that front. Because that, more than anything else right now, is absolutely critical in terms of the whole of Barbados' response to COVID-19. Now, I know naturally, obviously, there's already been a significant impact on the beach economy and certainly in the tourism sector and the corresponding the cancellation of a number of activities. Obviously, persons have already been impacted given the rapidly evolving scenario as it relates to the global shutdown or lockdown, if you refer to it as that. And therefore, what the Prime Minister has announced, obviously, on Friday night will go a long way in terms of being capable of responding to that. But right now, and I want to impress again and reiterate to Barbadians that it is absolutely critical that we focus on containment, whilst I accept that the anxiety with respect to the economy shall remain there for some time until the world normalizes. Our focus now as the government is to ensure that we can contain the spread of the virus. Any stimulus that will be undertaken, which we have announced that we will do, is contingent on us being capable as Barbadians of responding to the clear advice of the public health officials, following that advice with respect to that, taking, in a sense, personal responsibility for our movements and our actions, and being responsible at this time with respect to whether it is self-quarantine, self-isolation, or if you have to be quarantined, that you stay in quarantine in order not to be to further introduce the virus to the country. And so therefore it is important that as Barbadians that we demonstrate a level of discipline. It will not be an ideal situation for any of us if we have to go into isolation or quarantine, but it is important that we do that such that we can have the best possible chance of being able to deliver any stimulus or any program with respect to recovery going forward. But it is going to be a significant challenge, certainly for the government and the country, to respond in the sense that we are relying on individuals and things beyond our control such that we are in a position to respond as a country. But we shall manage it through, and as the Prime Minister has always indicated, we shall be open and honest with the public with respect to where things are, and therefore conversations like these are important, but we are working as a whole of government to ensure that we can maintain the public order and the delivery of key and critical public services to the country.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ryan Strawn. I would like you to stay on the line. We have to break for the latest in another 60 seconds or so. So what we will do is, that if anything, we can call you back, or you can call us, or you can just stay on the line. And same thing goes with Mr. Ed Clark. And we want everyone to stay with us because we're discussing the most important issue to affect Barbados, I guess, and since independence right now, because the implications for the immediate and long-term health of the Barbados economy, as well as the impact it's having on people's lives here, that is the COVID-19 pandemic. So far, we've heard from Dr. Simon Natrum, we've heard from Dr. Kevin Greenidge, Dr. Marcus Lashley, Marla Ducaran, as well as Mr. Ed Clark, and now Ryan Strawn. We want you to stay with us for the next few minutes, listen to the latest, and then we'll be right back to answer some of your other questions. Over to you, Dennis.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing materials. For building supplies, big or small, and building
metals, we have it all. And building metals, we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.